Anyway, it seems that whenever anything is rebuilt, it's always going to be compared to what the first version looked like. And one of the cases that comes to mind, kind of a prime example, was the rebuilding of Solomon's temple after it had been destroyed. It's a reading that comes from Ezra, the third chapter, and beginning in Ezra 3 at verse 8. It says, "Now in the second year of their coming to the house of God at Jerusalem, in the second month, Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jozadak, and the rest of their brothers, the priests and the Levites, and all who came from the captivity to Jerusalem, began the work and appointed the Levites from 20 years and older to oversee the work of the house of the Lord. Then Joshua, with his sons and brothers, stood united with Kadmiel and his sons, the sons of Judah, the sons of Henadad with their sons and brothers, the Levites, to oversee the workmen in the temple of God. But when the builders had laid the foundation of the temple of the Lord, the priests stood in their apparel with trumpets, and the Levites, the son of Asaph, with cymbals, to praise the Lord according to the directions of King David of Israel. They sang, praising, giving thanks to the Lord, saying, 'He is good. His loving kindness is upon Israel forever.' All the people shouted with a great shout when they praised the Lord, because the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid. Yet many of the priests and Levites and heads of fathers' households, the old men who had seen the first temple, wept with a loud voice when the foundation of this house was laid before their eyes, while many shouted for joy, so that the people could not distinguish the shout of joy from the sound of the weeping of the people. For the people shouted with a loud shout, and the shout was heard far away." Now, Solomon's temple had been destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar in 588. It was a grand building. If you go back and you read the record of the building of the temple, it was covered with gold. It was just an incredible building. Well, after it was destroyed, it took 53 or 54 years, not sure exactly how long, but in 535 BC, or maybe 534 BC, Joshua and Zerubbabel managed to lay the foundation for a rebuilt temple. And the old men, it, some translations, I love it, say, called them the ancient men that had seen Solomon's temple wept. Some shouted for joy, and you couldn't tell whether it was the shout of joy or the shout of weeping or the sound of weeping that you were hearing. Now that makes sense, because this second temple that they were building was different than the first temple, the one that Solomon had built. And there are some very specific ways that it was going to be very different. The Ark of the Covenant was not going to be in the Holy of Holies. And that was really the centerpiece of everything about the temple. And so when the temple was rebuilt by Zerubbabel and Joshua, they didn't have the Ark of the Covenant. All they had was a stone, and that stone was placed in the Holy of Holies, a place for the Ark of the Covenant to rest. the eternal light that had burned in Solomon's temple wasn't going to be there. And I was listening to a Jewish commentator on all of this, and the rabbi that I was listening to said, now we don't have the eternal light. What we have is a light bulb. This is, it's very different. And he said, the eternal light never burned out. It was constantly replenished. Our electric light bulb burns for a long time, but it eventually burns out. And this second temple was built from the rubble of a destroyed city. The circumstances of its building were very different than the circumstances when Solomon built the first temple. People had enjoyed peace. David had secured the borders. Everything was good with them when the first temple was built, but that's not the case as the second temple is built. They're facing opposition, and they're constantly fighting. In fact, the record says that as they built the finished building, the walls of the city, half the people worked on the wall and half the people stood by guarding them so that they could look on the work on the wall. It's just true that anytime we rebuild something that's been destroyed, there's always a tendency to compare what we rebuild with what we had in the first place. So I started thinking about some things that we might notice about what we're going through as we try to rebuild. So I'm going to share some of this with you. Let's see. I'm not going to do it that way. Let me get back. Oh, finally got it, I think. Can everybody see my slides now?
Yes, we can see.
Okay, good. That's a picture of flattening the curve. We've been seeing this picture over and over again. We've seen it so many times, we're probably tired of it. What we tried to do was take the total number of cases of coronavirus or COVID-19 and spread them out over a longer period of time so that we didn't overwhelm the healthcare system. And I think we have, in some cases, been successful in affecting this curve. We're quite a ways behind some other parts of the country on the West Coast. We're still on the upward side of this. We're not decreasing yet. And you've seen this. What do you need to do? Wash your hands, cover your mouth when you cough, try to avoid touching your face. How many of you can avoid touching your face? I can't. But we've seen those. Those are the recommendations. What's it going to look like when we travel on airplanes? Well, I saw this. This was a seating arrangement that would allow for social distancing on airplanes. And I don't know, that looks pretty good. The person in the middle seat has an armrest. Of course, there's a plexiglass window that weaves between all of the seats. That might drive me nuts. We're going to reopen our restaurants, but we're going to partition them off, and they'll have 50% capacity maybe. They'll stretch tape across some of the tables. This guy at his lunch counter has 4 out of 6 seats unoccupied. He's blocked them so that people can't sit there. This was an extreme case in Sweden. A person that owned a restaurant set up a table out in the middle of a field and delivered the food in that basket. And only one person could eat dinner in this restaurant at one time, or in the field that was served by this restaurant. I don't think we're going to get quite that bad. Here's a briefing in Washington, D.C., social distancing. People trying to stay 6 feet apart. I don't know what that's going to look like. This is a classroom, and you can see you've got social distancing. 6 feet apart, avoid shaking hands as a social greeting. Every time I see somebody, I reach out my hand to shake their hand, and they look at me like I'm terrible, and I'm not trying to be. It's hard to remember to stay 6 feet apart. This is a picture of Trader Joe's, and they have markings on the floor that they use to remind people to stand 6 feet apart. This is in a drugstore, and you've probably seen these when you go to a store. They have a place where you stand and wait for the person in front of you to finish, and then you move up. No more crowding the people that are in front of you. Now, this guy took it to an extreme. Social distancing on steroids. He decided to wear this big disc around him so that nobody could get closer than 6 feet. I don't think we're going to get like that, but we will probably be wearing masks. And Kim was talking about ordering some masks for us. And Ted talked about how all of the pharmacy staff at Bi-Mart is now going to be wearing masks. And just like anything else, some people are going to turn that into a fashion statement. You know, we're not supposed to take the elevator anymore. Now we're going to have to go up the stairs. Thank goodness the church house, the office at the church house is on the first floor. We're educating our kids from home. They can't go to school. They have to do everything that they do. Even when we reopen, they're going to still be doing things from home. And we're socially distanced. We can't be with our friends. And it's especially tough on people that are younger than me, because I don't have any friends, but some people have a lot of friends. This is a scene we're familiar with. Guys in the hazmat suits walking through an airport, spraying everything down. What's it going to look like? I don't know. I do know that we just got our pews recovered, and the guys finished today. They got the last of it done by about 3 o'clock, and they cleared out, and they look really good. They're really comfortable. Nobody's been able to sit on them but me so far. Ted came down, and we put a video screen on the wall in the lobby so that we can put announcements up there, and everybody can see those announcements as they come in. It's fantastic. That happens to be the TV that came out of my apartment in Salem, because we didn't have a place to put my TV. We got our banner up in the front, and we moved the tracks to the hallway. And you're all familiar with the way that we've had to take the Lord's Supper, these individual serving cups. I don't know when we'll be able to go back to the way that we were. But I do know that it's going to look very different in the future. And we're just going to have to accept the fact that it will look different. I'm sure that you guys have some ideas about what things might look like. Anybody want to share?
All right. Well, they've undone the mic, so I better drop it before I say something. Okay. All right. Okay.
Anybody have ideas about what things might look like when we get back together?
Well, I think it's hard to predict because we don't know what, you know, the state is going to recommend, what the CDC will recommend, what those phases are going to look like. So everything's just a guess, you know. Maybe we wouldn't be able to use the water fountain. You know, they're talking about that kind of thing. Maybe we use those individual serving for the Lord's Supper for a while, so we're not passing those elements. I don't know, because we don't know what it's going to look like. We don't know what the recommendations will be.
Well, we know is they're going to continue with putting restrictions on till they get an antidote. And we'll be under those restrictions. And one of the things that we will seriously consider is using Zoom for classes and also for lessons.
If we are able to assemble, it may mean that we're a lot more spaced out in the building, that every other pew is unoccupied, that kind of thing. So there will be more than likely have to be a lot more distance, and a lot more of the space that has always been free and open will be occupied now in the auditorium, because we'll just need to spread out.
That would be a good opportunity to make everybody that sits on the back two or three rows move up to the front.
I was just thinking the same thing. It will be a whole lot fuller.
We're trying to get space. We're trying to get space between us than moving together.
Yeah. Well, we won't have to sit behind Ron and Sherry anymore.
I was thinking the same thing. We don't have to sit in front of you.
I was thinking about using Zoom for shut-ins somehow.
Well, that's what I like, is that this gives us an opportunity to, I mean, we learn some new technology. It gives us opportunity to sort of evaluate the way that we've done things, and gives us an opportunity to look at it with new eyes.
And that's definitely something Dean and I have discussed, is how to make this technology that we've been able to take advantage of be more effective for people who have been living this type of distance, social distancing of necessity because of their health or because they just can't get out. I think of Judy Johnston. I mean, if we could provide her with an iPad, that would be really easy for her to participate in our services. That would be great for her.
Mm-hmm. You know, I know that Bruce and Kelly are on the computer quite a lot. Has anybody checked in with them and made sure we're inviting them to these Zoom meetings? Because I noticed they're not here.
They were here on Sunday. Their email 777E or 6 or something.
Oh, okay.
We were wondering who that was.
That was Bruce and Kelly.
Okay.
Oh, good. Do we know whether or not Bob Johnston is able to participate in this at all? Even like maybe one of those loaner tablets?
I'm not sure that he's even got the equipment. I've tried calling him two or three times and left messages, but he's not gotten back to me. I don't know if they're in town or exactly what's happening. I did speak to Bruce Johnston the other day. Briefly, he's still dealing with his foot problems. I asked him how his father was doing, and I guess they're moving Ralph in and out of the care facility. I don't know exactly how that works, but anyway, I guess he's kind of in and out of what's happening, and they're having a real difficult time getting him to drink liquids.
That's typical at that stage.
Well, I think it's important for us to start thinking about intentionality. You know, one of the things that I've been reading and was talking to Kim about, a lot of places are limiting the number of people that are together at any one time. So what a lot of places have done is rather than have people come to work 5 days a week, they come to work 4 days a week, and 2 days they work from home. So you only have half the people there on Monday and Tuesday, and the other half are there on Thursday and Friday. Maybe we'll have to look at not meeting together so often. We might meet together once on Sunday and limit our exposure to each other that way. I know when I was preaching in Alaska, for a long time, I preached in Anchorage on Sunday morning, and then I would drive out to Wasilla and preach on Sunday afternoon, and then I would drive back to Anchorage and preach in Anchorage on Sunday night. Well, after a while, the elders said, you know, we're large enough and the congregation is strong enough. We're just going to let you work with the group in Wasilla. We continue to pay you your salary, but you'll be able to work with the group in Wasilla. We'll just support you as a preacher in a different place. And so we got together and we said, well, now we get to make a decision about when we're going to worship. Do we want to worship twice on Sunday? Now we can do that. Or do you like worshiping once for a longer period of time? Or should we move it to Sunday morning? Or do we keep it on Sunday afternoon? We just got to be intentional about things. And it was good in a way that we got to think about things that we never would have thought about because they've been settled for so long. And for a while, we decided that what we would do was meet one time on Sunday, and we met on Sunday afternoon. Just about everybody got together. We ate lunch together over at a pizza place in Wasilla because it was a good place to eat pizza. And then everybody would go to the building, and we'd have worship at the building. And then after worship, we'd go over to somebody's house, and we'd eat dessert. And we decided that that was a good way for us to pursue ordering our worship. And we never would have even thought about that if it hadn't been for what we'd been through with me going out and working with them on Sunday afternoon. So we can now be more intentional about what we're doing and about the decisions that we make. And things don't have to be settled. So I think it's a good thing.
Something else that we need to think about is when we get back together is being able to sing. And whether or not if we have to wear a mask, you know, to drop our mask down or something, because that's something I really miss is the singing, because I'm a backup singer. That's one reason why I sat in the back, but I still enjoy all the singing.
Richard, you finally got on.
Yes.
I think it sounds to me like it might be a service in the morning and then maybe a Zoom service in the evening for people who couldn't attend.
Yeah, we can, you know, we've just got a lot of options, and we're fortunate that we have some technology that we can use. And we can decide how we're going to do things. So I think there are some good things that come out of this rebuilding effort. And I was thinking about this afternoon when I was at Eastern Washington University. I taught, and my office was in a really old building. It wasn't as old as the administration building. Kim's building was even older than mine. My building had air conditioning. Hers didn't even have air conditioning.
No.
And they were thinking about rebuilding the thing, and they were going to finally put air conditioning into the building because it was so old. And I can imagine when they started rebuilding the temple in Jerusalem that somebody said, hey, now is a good time to put phones in because it's hard to put phones into a stone. No, I'm just teasing. But, you know, we have the ability to think and be intentional about things, and we're not hamstrung by what we have. One of the guys that was working on the pews asked me what that big knob is in the back of the church building, and I had no idea. Does anybody know what that big knob on the wall is next to the door?
Are you talking about next to the single door?
Next to the doors that go out to the lobby. It's a great big knob. I'll show you when you get down here. I had no idea what that thing was for. I'm sure it had a function at one time.
If it's the knob that's out in the hallway, it used to control the fans.
Ah, okay. Okay. Okay.
Now we do it with a remote.
Yeah, right.
Well, and if I understand, I think the point is intentionality and thinking about what we're doing. And I think there may be some constraints because of the social distancing and what we may have to do. That doesn't mean that what we've done in the past is wrong. It doesn't mean it's like your temple example. Solomon's temple wasn't not appropriate or not or wrong. It's just it. But when you have to regroup like this, it gives you an opportunity to sort of think that stuff through and see what you want to do. There are some pieces that we're missing. I mean, we're missing singing together and we're commanded to sing. There are some pieces that we're missing. We're missing the contribution. We're commanded to give on the first day of the week, just to lay by in store. So, you know, I think you're right. We need to be intentional about what we're doing. And it's been nice that we've been introduced to this type of technology. We can look at possibilities. There are some things that we can do with this and with other technologies, other things. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yep. Well, let me kind of bring this back around to a conclusion. And the conclusion that I see in all of this is that if we'll let it, going through this experience can teach us to be more dependent upon God and less dependent upon ourselves. In James 4 and verse 13, James says, he's cautioning people who think that they get to control everything. And James says, you don't. You depend upon God. So in James 4 at verse 13, he says, come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we'll go into such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You're just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. But as it is, you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. So if it brings us back to God, if it reminds us that we're really not in charge, and that we depend upon God, then in my mind, we've learned a valuable lesson. So I think whether the future looks better or worse is in some ways dependent upon us, and there will always be comparison.
Agreed.
Well, that's all I had.
Yes, agreed.
Next week, Lord willing, we'll be talking about what we do when one person says, for instance, I can still go out in social distance, and another person says you shouldn't go out. How do we deal with differences that are going to arise in the way that we approach what we do?
That'll be interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I was talking with Jack Hafer about this. He said, you're getting way off in the weeds there, bud. And I thought, no, I don't think I am. I think this is really important. And I know one of the ways that we shouldn't be doing it was the way that, they turned him a pastor in Louisiana. He wanted to have worship in the parking lot at the building, and there were protesters on site and said you shouldn't be gathering. And so he decided to run over one of the protesters with a car. That's not the way to do it. I know that much for sure.
Lonnie Fritz is doing that in Hemet. He's
running over people?
No, they're doing parking lot worship service.
Okay.
Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there will be as many different approaches to how we can do things as there are people, probably. And so we're going to have to learn how to get along together.